This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Dashran Johan. According to Bukit Aman Criminal Investigation Department Director Jose Mohamed, a total of 45 cases involving child pornography were reported during the MCO period. Now, this is an increase of 27 cases compared to the year prior to the implementation of MCO. But why is this so and what can we do about it? Joining me on Zoom right now to share her insights is Sharmila Sekaran, the chairperson of Voice of the Children. Welcome to the show, Sharmila.
Hi, Dashran.
Let's jump right into it. Now, as I just mentioned in the intro, it's been reported that there's been an increase in cases involving child pornography during the MCO. Were you surprised by this?
Oh dear, sadly, I can't say I was surprised. Mm. You know, the fact that people are actually engaging in this kind of, viewing these kinds of images is a bad thing. But the fact that the numbers have increased during the MCO period has not really been surprising. What would be really worrying also is whether this is starting an increasing trend and you know, people who are not participating in viewing these kinds of images that have now been hooked, whether it's going to spread and the numbers will start escalating, that would be really, really worrying.
When it comes to child pornography, what exactly constitutes as cases involving child pornography? What does the Malaysian law say exactly?
So, you know, Darshan, first, I think I would just like to suggest a correction or more accurate terminology to move away from the use of child pornography and that we should start referring to these kinds of images and films as child sexual abuse images or child sexual abuse material.
Right.
Because, you know, with pornography, there's often an element of consent. Like when two adults film themselves, you know, having sex with each other, it's done by two adult consenting parties. But, you know, a child cannot consent to having pictures or participating in activity that involves sexually explicit activity and behavior. And so there is no consent here. And you know, we really need to draw attention to the fact that this is actual abuse. It is exploitation. It's a violation of a child, which is sexual in nature. And so these images are actual abuse. A lot of people kind of disassociate, you know, when they access this material, for example, online,
right,
images and videos online, they kind of disassociate themselves as being violators. They think they are just in harmless, you know, I'm just viewing something. I'm doing something quite harmless. I'm not violating a child. I would never go out and violate a child. But, you know, we need to draw attention to the fact that when you access material like this, you may as well be the person violating the child. You are no different from the person violating.
There's no supply without a demand, right? So even accessing the information,
as well,
the images, the videos, it plays a role in, you know, pushing for more of these videos to be circulated.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So it's, we need to remember that this is child sexual abuse and violation. You know, our law is quite recent. It's 2017. And we actually did a lot of research as to how other countries were dealing with these issues. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their successes and perhaps their failures as well. And, you know, there was a lot of learning that went into that. So, you know, I think our Sexual Offences Against the Children Act is 2017 Act is actually quite strong and robust in some ways. It can be strengthened a little bit more, but in terms of, unfortunately, it uses the word child pornography, and I totally understand why. It's a term that people, you know, you say child pornography, everyone knows and understands what you're talking to, as opposed to child sexual abuse images. Huh? What's that? You know, so this is using different terminologies in the education process. The Act uses child pornography, and it's quite robust because it covers a wide range of material, whether it's film, like video content or images content. It covers written content as well as, you know, the way the material is being created and disseminated electronically, mechanically, digitally, whatever. It also covers kind of printed material. So, and, you know, the good thing is that they've also included things like morphed images. So what some people are doing is they're children and then they are making it kind version. So again, people are thinking, well, you know, it's a cartoon. It's okay. It's a cartoon kind of thing. It's not an actual child. But the impact and effect of actually viewing something like this is still considered within that our laws definition of child pornography. So yeah, I think our law is quite robust in that.
Right.
And, you know, we are on par with, you know, we did consider what was going on internationally. And so we are quite on par in that sense.
Okay. Now let's go back to the MCO itself. Why is there an increase during the MCO?
I think it's also to do with the fact that people have perhaps a little bit more time on their hands. Mm. You know, you're supposed to be working from home, but you actually save on your travel time, you know, the 40 minutes, half hour, 1 hour that it takes for you to travel to work. Some people cannot work from home. You know, their work does not enable them to work from home.
Right.
So, you know, like now, administration staff, only 30% in the office, which means you work one day and you're off one day. But if your work cannot be done online from home, then basically you're sitting around, you've got nothing to do. So this sometimes may be a natural progression, if you like, within that context, because they've got nothing better to do. But also the fact that, you know, because there's a lot more available and people are sending a lot more material out via social media and, you know, digital devices, mobile devices. So, you know, even if you had not accessed pornography in particular child sexual abuse images prior to this, or material prior to this, if someone sends it to you and you watch it, and then, you know, you sometimes, you know, with AI, artificial intelligence, it suggests, you know, like Facebook, you look for one thing and suddenly Facebook is suggesting a whole bunch of things that they think you would like, you know? So it's that kind of thing. So you accidentally view something and suddenly Facebook or whatever it is thinks you're viewing certain things and they suggest things to you. There's a wide variety of ways and reasons for accessing. You know, I think the important thing here is that we need to know that this is happening and we need to stop hiding from it. We need to stop being ostriches with our head in the sand. I'm talking about the government and society at large. Mm-hmm. And we really need to take very clear, determined steps that this is a problem. It is a huge problem in society. Malaysia, if you look at the statistics, in terms of not specifically child porn, but that's high as well, in Asia, we are one of the highest accessors of pornography and child sexual abuse images and material. In Asia, and we're talking about places like Korea, Taiwan, you know, it's not just Southeast Asia, we're talking the whole of Asia. I'm not sure if it includes China, but certainly the rest of it, even if it excludes China. And apparently we stay longer on sites. So having accessed it, they're able to track, like someone may accidentally access a site that they may not have wanted to, but then you very quickly close it down thinking, oh my gosh, what's happened?
Yeah.
Malaysians are high on the people, we stay longer on pages, which means we're actually consuming this. And we're also very high in terms of child sex. We need to be aware of that and take real determined cognizant steps.
Right. Sharmila, I'm also curious about who, but in based on your research and some of the things that you have seen, probably heard, who are usually the perpetrators when it comes to child pornography, especially when it comes to taking these videos, grooming children, which is something I want to talk to you later. Who are usually the perpetrators in these instances?
You know, Darshan, sadly, it crosses boundaries. You have children, like teenagers, engaging in this as well. But that is more kind of inquisitiveness. Mm-hmm. They may not quite realize what they're doing. Mm-hmm. How damaging what they're doing is to them as well as to others. But the tragedy is the other adults who are engaging in this kind of activity and exploiting children in this manner. And sadly, there are a large number of, I think there are bigger numbers. Those are larger numbers of adults engaging in viewing child sexual images, abusive images. And You can also, they're also able to determine this in terms of location. There are ways of tracking this in terms of geography. So there's certain states, for example, where there are higher rates than other states. But I think it is fair to say that it is across the board.
Okay, we're going to hit for a very quick break. I'm speaking with Sharmila Sekaran, Chairperson of Voice of the Children on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the line with me is Sharmila Sekaran, Chairperson of Voice of the Children. And we're talking about recent reports indicating that there's been an increase in cases involving child pornography in Malaysia during the MCO period compared to the year before the MCO. Now, authorities are saying, Sharmila, that child grooming is one of the reasons there's an increase in child pornography cases, or as you rightfully mentioned before the break, you know, that the proper terminology that we should probably be using is sexual abuse. And we are talking about videos and images of child sexual abuse. So there is the element of child grooming. What can you tell us about child grooming?
Child grooming is really where a child is led to start thinking and participating in sexually explicit manners, ways. And it's usually done by befriending a child, establishing some kind of emotional connection with the child. And, you know, therefore, you know, the child's kind of initial inhibitions are lowered. And then the perpetrator goes in and you know, tries to, there's an escalation of the kind of abuse that happens. Sometimes it may be in terms of sexual images, but it can also escalate into a very physical contact with a child where they meet the groomer and the child meet and carry out sexual activity. You see, a child is not going to reveal themselves naturally. And especially now, if children are being told, be careful of strangers, things like that, you know, they may be a little bit more alert. Some schools are very good at alerting children and, you know, teaching them to protect themselves. But when a child's inhibitions and barriers, you know, the natural barriers are lowered by various ways. And, you know, these perpetrators, the groomers, are exceedingly skilled at identifying children who may be lonely, children who may have been targeted, like bullying in school. And so, you know, they are very much alone and are able to get to the child and gain the child's confidence. And then, you know, they move on. And it actually can happen really fast where a child online through a chat group or some kind of online social media interaction, a child can be asked to very slowly reveal certain parts of themselves, do certain things to themselves, which are sexual in nature, and like, you know, taking off their clothes, touching themselves, things like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unbeknown to the child, the perpetrator could be recording it.
Right.
And of course, there's always the element of the secret between you and me. We're best friends and, you know, there's this, so don't tell anyone. And then, you know, and it can even go to the extent of where more than one child, you know, it starts with one child and that child's kind of like shares it with another friend or a sibling or whatever it is. And then you have more than one child being encouraged to do certain things. Sometimes it could be through showing children other images of sexual explicit imagery and saying, oh, can you do this? You know, can you dance in this manner? And or can you enact this pose? You know, so that's how it happens. It happens incrementally, slowly, but let us not be fooled that it's going to take a period of 1 month or 1 year or whatever. In terms of timelines, it can actually escalate very, very fast. Mm. So parents really need to be aware of this and on the ball.
And you know, tying back to a question that I asked earlier, when I asked who are the perpetrators usually, and it's because of this child grooming thing, right? So I'm not asking just about who are the perpetrators in terms of consumers, but also when it comes to child grooming, when it comes to actually recording the videos, I think a lot of the times it may not necessarily be strangers or some random person messaging you in chat groups, although that happens very frequently as well. It can also be family members, you know, fathers, mothers, maybe uncles and things like that.
Absolutely. When you mention child grooming, it could be someone like this, you know, at the other end of a laptop or whatever, talking to the child and then encouraging the child to do certain things. So they are just talking to the child. They're not actually, in that sense, doing anything to the child, but they are encouraging and talking to the child to do and enact and carry out certain activity. So in some ways, one would say, well, it's the child doing this, right? It's the child who takes off their clothes. It's not someone in the room taking off the child's clothes and showing their body. So they think that they're not actually perpetrators in that way. But, you know, you're absolutely right. At the end of the day, it is the person at the end of the camera or video or whatever it is, a handphone now, mobile device, that is also the perpetrator. You know, in some countries, I'm not sure that we're seeing a lot of this in Malaysia, but I think it's something that authorities really, really need to keep a very, very strict watch out for. In some countries, due to poverty, and especially with the MCO and you know, lack of resources, people losing jobs, in some countries, parents are already exposing their children. So the parents are encouraging people to groom their children, and I guess the parents get paid, or the parents are encouraging the children to talk explicitly with people at the other side of a line or a video or whatever it is. I know it's happening a little bit in Malaysia. It started, but you know, it can very quickly kind of burst, and that's one way that parents can earn some money, right? When if people are willing to pay you 50 ringgit, 100 ringgit to expose your child in this manner, to take pictures of your child and send it to them via your mobile device or whatever, that is something that we really need to keep a watch out for. It's already happening.
And that's really, really scary to think about. You hear these stories, but you can never get used to them. You know, how parents would do that to their own children.
Yeah. I suppose it's two things. One has to be in a very bad place and a very dark place to do that. And two, to also be exceedingly desperate and selfish. It is really deeply worrying, the direction that this can go in and has already started going. Like I said, I'm aware of this happening. It's a business in some countries already. It's a known business in some countries. It's happening here. I wouldn't categorize it quite yet as a business, although, you know, money does exchange hands and it has happened. But it's not up there, out there, where, you know, you're getting large numbers. But like I said, you know, it's a matter of time if we don't get a hold of it.
Now, do you think that here in Malaysia, we have enough awareness among the wider society on why, you know, on the fact that child grooming, child sexual exploitation, child, you know, circulating and consuming sexual images of children. Do you think there's enough awareness among wider society on the fact that this is really, really bad and why it's bad?
No, not at all. I think a lot of parents, even if they are aware this kind of thing happens, they either think it's not going to happen to them and their children, or they don't appreciate and realize the severity of the kinds of numbers that of children that are being are involved in these kinds of exploitations and you know, the availability of child sexual abuse images. If you remember Harith Iskandar, I remember this a couple of years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, he talked about images of morphed images of his baby child, right? Very young child, available on the dark net. Right. You have some really weird, grotesque people, evil people, who will just cull images from your Facebook and your other available social media, morph the images, so they'll just mix up. They'll take the child or the head off, you know, or the face of your child and put it on someone else's child and put that child's face on your child. And, you know, they'll morph the images or kind of manipulate the images. But at the end of the day, it comes from this. And the number of parents who still very eagerly share images of their children, of their families, you know, sometimes, you know, it's cute, you know, you've got this little girl wearing a tank top and doing some whatever Shakira dance or whatever. It's a suggestive dance. It's very cute. but parents are putting this, they're not keeping it for themselves to look at and laugh at and, you know, show grandparents and aunts and uncles. They're actually putting this, and it's available on the internet, which, you know, bad people can pull out, extract and utilize and share. So yes, you know, parents are just not sufficiently aware of what is going on and their need to protect their children. I know people who are very, very particular about the kind of images where they post images of their children. And if they're going to put anything online, it's like the back of a child or whatever. They don't show the child's face. So they only send photos of the children to select family members. But if you look at the Facebook, majority of parents are quite happy to share liberally. You know, even if you're sharing with grandparents, you need to tell grandparents, you are not allowed to send this to your friends. If you want to show your friends from your phone, do so, but do not share it. Do not forward it, you know, because it's so easy to forward these pictures.
So do you then suggest that parents do not create Instagram accounts of their children? Do not, because for some parents, maybe, you know, in their head, they're just like, oh, it's memories, like it's my kid. So I, like, some parents have created Instagram profiles for their child, and the entire profile is just baby pictures or, like, you know, 2-year-olds and all that. Would you suggest that parents don't do this, or is there an age where you would say that, okay, now you can start sharing it more on social media? How would you suggest to tackle this?
So there are two things. Very good and interesting question. There are two things. Who owns those images? So in copyright law, we talk about someone's moral right, mm-hmm. okay? And we talk about this in relation to performers, say, for example, right? Mm-hmm. The exploitation of a performer's image. At the end of the day, a photograph of me is about me, not about my parents.
Yes.
Regardless of the age of the person, right? Mm-hmm. So I think, first, we need to appreciate that children are independent beings and not an extension of ourselves. And so if I want to share a photo of myself, I can share it far and wide as much as I want. But if I'm going to share the photo of someone else, I need to at some point get their consent or be protective of the image until they can give consent. Mm. So that's the first thing I think we really need to rethink. And you know, previously, when we had, you know, the old style cameras, not so easy to share. Today, people are taking photographs all over the place of everyone. And, you know, people are taking photographs of me and putting up on their Facebook. So people know what I'm doing because someone else has put a photo of me on their Facebook.
Right.
Technically, you should get my permission.
That's
technically.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So I think we really need to rethink and have that conversation generally about this, and more so when it comes to children. And so in direct answer to your question about what, you know, it's you know, I think it's wrong for me to say this is what you must do and that is what you must do. You know, we are a free and democratic society. But I think the important message that parents need to take away is they need to exercise caution and wisdom. In anything that you do, you need to know what you're doing and the consequence of it. So it's the same thing like, you know, should you get your child vaccinated for, you know, the MMR, the rubella and mumps and whatever? Some parents are saying no for whatever reason. Some parents are weighing up the pros and cons. Even now, do you get the vaccine, the COVID vaccine? There are a lot of anti-vaxxers. You need to think about it and come up with your own, exercise wisdom, discernment, caution, speak to people, get advice, know what you're doing, and then make that decision. So should parents have Instagrams of their children? Well, you know, for them, that may be their only way that they're keeping a document of their child.
Right.
They want to hand over to the child when the child comes of age. Fine. But what is the security? Are you sure your Instagram account is secure? Are you only sharing it with a very, very select group of people? Are you certain that there can be, you know, no one can break in and hack into it and steal stuff? Are you changing your passwords, your codes? Are you taking interest in it? Or have you put it up and it's open to the public and open to anyone and everyone to access? So that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Some parents, you know, we have to recognize that there are some children who are participating in like advertisements, you know, marketing,
right,
whatever, like Benetton in those days and things like that, right? Or Gap or
yes,
whatever. you know, parents need to take an interest. So, you know, now everyone's child can be a gap child or a Benetton child, right? Yeah. In those days, it was only the marketing company that chose the children. Today, all our children can be these, you know.
Yeah, they are child Instagram influencers and YouTubers and exactly. all these things. Yeah,
exactly. You know, so parents really need to know and understand what they're exposing their child to. That's the only thing I can caution, you know. And if you're not sure, then on the side of caution rather than go the other way.
And what else can parents do about this? Because, you know, I'm you know, how should they educate their children on matters such as child grooming? You know, what sort of discussion should they be having with their kids and from what age?
So, you know, sadly, Darshan, the prevalence of grooming is starting earlier and earlier, both in the physical world as well as in the online world. Children at much younger ages are accessing mobile devices and you know, things available online. So there are a couple of things. I mean, for the very young child that you can't really teach or instruct, you know, I'm talking about your five-year-olds that parents are just handing the handphone to keep the child occupied, right? Mm-hmm. Parents really need to make sure that they've put up the necessary security within the phone so that the child can only access, you know, let's say it's a particular game that's available online and the parent has actually assessed the game and they have done the research and they know the game is safe, then, you know, that the child can only access that game and nothing else. That the child can only access certain videos, you know, whatever the cartoon that the child wants to watch. The parents have vetted it and they know that it's okay. And, you know, that is all the child can access. And if the child tries to access something else, it's just blocked or there's an alert for the parent. When we're talking about slightly older children who may have their own mobile devices, but are also now going out into society, like going to school and things like that, parents need to start teaching children about safe and unsafe touches. Parents need to, you know, share with children about who can undress them, say, for example, if they're going to kindergarten and they've wet themselves, the teacher needs to get involved, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, who is allowed to undress them or touch them or whatever it is, and everyone else is not. You know, parents need to ensure in the physical realm that children, that they vetted the people who are coming into contact with the children. So has the school done the necessary checks against the background of teachers and teaching assistants and, I don't know, the guardian, the school bus driver, and the security guard, you know, whoever the child could come into contact with. In the online world, because children are now perhaps having their own mobile devices to enable them to do their schoolwork, especially now with the MCO, you know, if a lot of teaching has gone online. What are the checks? Again, have the parents kind of protected, ensured certain security codes on their devices, you know, the Wi-Fi and so forth. You know, you can even clone your child's phone so that every message that your child gets, and this also goes towards bullying, so you know where your child is being bullied. You can clone and tell the child that this is happening so that the child is aware that their privacy is being breached to some extent, and have that discussion with the child. But that's one way of protecting the child so that all the messages or whatever communication that's happening on the phone, you also get as a parent and you can monitor and track. You know, other ways are, you know, if the child, again, like if it's a child-owned device, then at night, these devices need to be outside the bedroom. Mm. And it's an opportunity for the parents to do a check, like, you know, what do you call it? The cache and all that kind of thing, you know, where right. you can actually see the websites and places that a person has gone to online, to do that, bearing in mind that children know far more about online usage and know how to clear caches and all that than mm-hmm. you do. So you need to be really clear about this. But, you know, these are some of the ways that a parent can protect. One, by talking and explaining things to the child. You know, I grew up and my parents were very, very strict about us talking to strangers. We were not allowed to open the door to strangers. We were not allowed to communicate to strangers. There would be parents' friends would call on the phone, want to speak to parents. And, you know, they would know about us because they weren't parents' friends, but right. we don't know them. And, you know, we were taught exactly what to say. I'm really sorry. Can I just take your name and number? And I'll give let my parents know when they come back, and not to reveal anything else. Don't have that conversation with the person if you don't know who it is, right? But we were a lot less open to the kinds of access mm-hmm. From the outside world than children are today. And then as the child gets older, we need to start teaching children how to recognize grooming, to be aware, to have open discussions with children about how they're feeling, the kinds of sites that they are, or chat rooms or whatever that they're in, you know, things mm-hmm. like that. Helping children to understand how trust is built. And one of the big problems with mobile devices is that we're forming greater relationships and connections with inanimate objects, our phone and our laptops and whatnot, you know, iPads, than with real human beings. So it's important for parents to try to encourage children to have physical relationships, you know, real relationships, both with the child, but also, you know, like within a school setting or a community setting, you know, to encourage children to come over and play with the child and play those outdoor games, you know, things like that. So there's a lot that parents need to be aware of. But having taught children, there are a lot of traps that groomers and perpetrators set. So, you know, that is why I said children need to not share information about themselves. Hmm. And parents need to tell their children this. Groomers also know how to pick their targets. They don't pick the outgoing, exuberant child. They pick the loners. They pick the children who post photos of their home where they're alone at home, or right. where parents are out all the time. Or, you know, you can just do a very quick check. There's this child, and then I look up Tatler and whatever it is, and these are the parents that are constantly socializing, which means the children are left at home alone with the maid or whatever. Those are the children to target. So, you know, that is why we really need to manage and monitor. Parents need to be aware of this, the kind of information that is available out there, and the amount of very, very quickly with a, you know, just a couple of keystrokes on the computer, you can search a lot of stuff about a lot of people. Mm. So it's really important. Parents really need to know this and to manage the online footprint as to what it is disclosing about them and their families and the children in particular.
All right. And with that, Sharmila, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you so much, Dashan.
That was Sharmila Sekaran, chairperson of Voice of the Children, talking to us about the rise in cases involving child pornography during the MCO compared to the year before, and what we can do about it as a society, and what parents need to keep an eye out on. So if you missed any part of the show, you can download the podcast on the BFM app or on bfm.my. Once again, I'm Dashan Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.